Now, I said there are these five building blocks, and I want to tell you just a couple of stories to illustrate a couple of them. And the first story is about a company you also know well that was a startup that had no business model at all for Plan A. Its business model for Plan B did not work, but the business model for Plan C was a license to print money, and Plan D has been just off the charts, and that company is Google. So I think you know the story. Sergey and Larry had some PhD grants. They said, we have this little task. You know, we're going to invent a really cool algorithm, and we're just going to organize the world's information so it's nice and accessible to everybody. Nice idea. They build the algorithm, they launch it, they put it up on the web, and it's sitting on a server, and pretty soon we all flock to Google, right? Because it's actually a better search engine. So they have to keep buying more servers. Well, their PhD grants are running a little thin, right? So they'd like a little money to come in. Well, how are we going to get some money for this? All these users love us, but they're not paying us. It's kind of like Facebook and Twitter, right? We can love it, but we don't pay for it. So they said, aha, we have the answer. We're going to license this great search engine to other portals who need search too. Guess what? Didn't work. They didn't want to pay. Plan C, however, was stolen from another analog. There was another search engine company called Overture. Overture was in Southern California. They actually had a lousy search engine, but they had a really good, simple idea. Let's put paid search on one side of the page, and we'll put objective search on the other side of the page. Really rocket science idea, right? But actually, that was the key to having Google begin to print money. And Plan D then was to serve up ads on lots of other sites, and that's where Google gets more than half of its business today. Okay, gross margin models. I won't tell you this story in detail because you know the eBay story, but you know, if you want to move some stuff from your garage to my garage or my attic to your attic, what do we do if we're eBay? Well, we just move around a few electrons, right? And it's the users who have to move the goods. And so does eBay have to spend very much money for each transaction? No, right? Because moving electrons is really cheap. So eBay's cost of goods sold, that is the cost of moving one more transaction on the web, is essentially zero. Gross margin is essentially 100%. Would you like to have a business where the gross margin is 100%? Yeah, you probably would. eBay kind of liked it too. But very interestingly, there was a company already in business at the time doing this same thing on the web. But their idea was, well, we got to make sure the goods are, they work and they're, you know, quality and not busted and stuff. So we're going to receive the goods, we're going to check them, clean them up, and then we're going to ship them on to the user. Does that cost money? A lot of money. So their gross margins were about 10%, eBay's 100%. We know who won, right? Okay. That's the eBay story. Operating model. There's an airline probably all of you guys have flown. I've flown them. I prefer not to fly them because it takes longer to get to Stansted from where I live than it takes to get from Stansted to my destination. But the Ryanair story is a really interesting story because Ryanair was an airline already in business that was failing. Their plan A was to focus on the Irish-English travel market, and we're just going to fly people back and forth from Dublin to Manchester and Dublin to London and so on, just back and forth, and we're going to dominate that. Guess what? Losing money big time. And they had this accountant named Michael O'Leary, and they said, Michael, will you come in and run this business and see if you can fix it? So the first thing O'Leary does is he says, well, gee, we're losing a lot of money. Maybe I can cut some costs, because that's what accountants do, right? They know how to do that, cut costs. So how am I going to do that? Well, I think I'll go have dinner with this guy, Herb Kelleher, because I hear there's an airline in the U.S. that's already figured this out. It's called Southwest. So he went to Texas, had dinner with Kelleher, and came back and said, I've got to take operating costs, day-to-day operating costs, out of my airline. If you were going to do that, what are some of the costs you could take out of an airline? What's one cost you could take out?
The luggage.
The luggage. So you're not going to take anybody's luggage.
And you have to pay.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll work on the costs now so we can take luggage out. What else can we take out?
No hotels for staff overnight.
We're not going to let anybody working for us sleep anywhere. They have to go home, right? Or sleep in the plane, whatever, you know? Yeah, okay, so no costs like that. They're short flights anyway. They aren't far from home. What else?
Check-in process?
Check-in. So eliminate a laborious check-in process. We'll just have a free-for-all to go get the seats, and we don't care who sits where, right? It's another thing you can take out. What else can you take out? Food. Who wants the food anyway? It's no good, right? Okay, so you take out the food. What else do you take out?
Running multiple different aircraft. Costs.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money to run different kinds of airplanes, right? Because you got to have different spare parts and you got to train people and all that. So we're going to have only one kind of airplanes. It's going to be Boeing 737s. One of the other things he said is, where do we want the planes to be most of the time? On the ground or in the sky? In the sky. That's what people are paying for, right? So how are we going to do that? Well, we've got to cut ground time. How are we going to do that? Well, let's see, what do our people have to do while the plane's on the ground? Well, one of the things they have to do is clean all the garbage out of those seat back pockets where we put our candy wrappers and our used newspapers. So let's order planes with no seat back pockets. Then we don't have to clean them out. You know the little window shades, you know? Well, somebody's got to go around and push those up if people leave them down. So what do you think? Let's order planes with no window shades, right? So he has figured out how to take all the possible costs out of running an airline, and I'm sure you've heard his greatest, latest publicity stunt, and that is to put a coin slot on the loo, right? Now that's actually not taking costs out, that's turning to the revenue model here, right? Now he's not going to really do that, but it makes great press. But the interesting thing is, having now taken just about every cost you could possibly take out of an airline, and he's done it really well, arguably even better than Southwest, what he's now done is said, okay, now how can I work on my revenue model, start charging for luggage, let's run a lottery on board, we'll get some revenue that way, we'll do hotel rooms and cars, and guess how much they're getting per passenger in revenue other than tickets today? 12 euros per passenger average. Not too bad. His goal is to get to where you don't have to pay to fly because there's all the other revenue coming in. We'll see what he can do, but it's a great turnaround story. The working capital model is a really crucial and often overlooked part of most business plans. And the story I want to tell is the story about a company that some of you may know, Costco. Is there a Costco near Cambridge? No, I don't think there is. Is anybody a Costco member? You know what's distinctive about Costco as a store? You have to pay to shop there. Imagine having to pay to shop in a store. That's a little bit of a goofy idea, right? Why would you ever pay to shop in a store? Well, it turns out that if the store sells stuff in really big quantities and can get really good prices from its vendors, and you can save a lot of money by shopping there, you might actually be willing to pay, right? So Costco put together this business model that says you have to pay $50 or 50 pounds, whatever, to be a member, and then you can shop there. And you're going to save enough buying ketchup in not little tiny jars, but gallon jars, mayonnaise gallon jar, toilet paper, 24 rolls. That's kind of how it works. And you save enough money that it's well worth your 50 quid a year to be a member. What's interesting about the business model is this. If you add up all the 50-pound items that everybody who's a member pays for and compare that to operating profit, that is two-thirds of their operating profit year in, year out. What does that let them do with a basic retailing business? They can basically run it for break-even, right? So try and compete with that if you're Marks and Spencer or Target in the U.S. or Walmart or whatever. Amazing working capital. They basically have the customer's money before the customer goes to shop. And if you can build a business model with a working capital model like that, it's going to radically alter how much investment capital you need. Maybe you won't even need any. The best kind of capital you can get, maybe the best is really government grants, but second to that is money from your customers. So fabulous working capital model they built. Finally, your investment model. I think you all know the first company here, Skype. Who uses Skype in the room? Probably almost everybody, right? Well, Vonage is a U.S. company that had basically the same idea at basically the same point in time, but they went at it with a different business model. Skype had this audacious idea that said, you know, people like to make telephone calls, especially to faraway family and friends, but who says you need a telephone to make a telephone call? Let's cut out the phone. Vonage says, oh, telephone calls. Okay, you need a telephone. And then that meant they had to deal with the telephone companies to rent the last mile from them, and they had to have switches and routers and all that stuff. So they needed a lot of money. So they couldn't go out and give their calls for free like Skype can do. And Vonage spent in year one to build up enough critical mass of customers $246 million to get to 1.4 million customers, about $180 a customer. Skype in year one got to 7 million customers. And do you know how much they spent on marketing? Zero. Not a cent. Fundamental difference, but the same basic idea. The difference was the business model and the technology to support it.